Welcome back to the Niners Wire podcast. My name is Chris Biederman. This is our post-NFL draft edition. We're going to be joined by the Sacramento Bee's Matt Barrows in a little bit, 49ers beat writer. But now I'm joined with our super producer, Rob Lauder, and our scouting expert, Jared Brown, to talk all things 49ers drafts. And I think, guys, the 49ers made a pretty big splash by being able to get Solomon Thomas moving back one spot in a trade with the Chicago Bears, who wound up moving up one spot to take Mitchell Trubisky, and we can talk about that too. But I think the big deal coming out of the first night, and we touched on it since then, the 49ers obviously filled out their draft board. They have 10 new rookies. They're going to add a bunch more undrafted guys, which are going to be announced formally later this week. But for now that we know what a full draft class looks like under Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, what are you guys' takeaways? Rob, I'll start with you.
Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. And I know that's kind of a general, not necessarily a cop-out, but nobody knew what to expect going into this when it was their first draft as general manager head coach tandem. And everything they'd said prior to the draft checked off all the boxes. They seemed like they had a really good vision for what they wanted. They definitely seemed to be on the same page, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. So, you know, it was kind of like, you know, it was time for the rubber to meet the road. And I think it was really, really impressive. And it's not very often that you see as far as, and we know how almost pointless draft grades are, because you have to give the class a few years to pan out and see how the team uses
except
them.
For the Niners Wire draft grades. The Niners
yes.
Wire draft grades are perfect.
As long as you're kind of sticking to those, and you know, you can take other draft grades into account, but just come back for the Niners Wire draft grades kind of just to make sure to get that validation. But as far as you need a couple years to kind of see how everything goes and how the team utilizes them, and rarely do you see almost unanimous praise from everywhere across the league. And I say almost unanimous because there's onesies and twosies, but everybody for the most part seems pretty blown away with how they did. And I would include myself in that. I think from top to bottom, when you look at the class, you can see what they wanted. You can see a vision in the players that they were trying to select and kind of the team they're trying to build. It stands out being pretty obvious. It's just how cohesive their vision was. And you know, everything they said at every press conference, at every turn, made sense. They were able to justify every pick pretty well. And they all, you know, outside of C.J. Beathard, who's kind of materialized as making a lot more sense, the Iowa quarterback in the third round, everything, there weren't a whole lot of head-scratchers, which isn't usually the case, and it hasn't been the case over the last 5 years or so with Trent Baalke. So, overall, impressed. You know, I think it's a great start, and this draft needed to be a foundation, and especially with Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster, I think they did just that.
Jared, what stood out to you?
I think it also is a good indication of, at least in the short term, over the next year or two, how John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and even Parag Marate plan on building this team, which is much like what many of us expected, in that they would bring in, you know, bargain type free agents. In this case, they had to overpay a little bit for some of these players because they had the money to spend. But they bring in, you know, second tier players on offense, and that includes in the draft, you know, spending offensive picks later to bring in some quality talent, but really more developmental depth pieces, and putting a priority on stud defenders early in the draft. And I think that alludes to John Lynch's trust in Kyle Shanahan as a coach. And certainly over the last few years, we've seen sort of a disconnect from the front office to the coaching staff. And you're left wondering, what's really this cohesive plan in this front office? And do they understand, does the front office understand what the coaching staff needs? And does the coaching staff understand the difficult task that the front office had, especially when the 49ers were good and picking late in the first round, and the difficulties of finding the high quality players that they needed at those times to kind of get over that final hump of beating the Seahawks? It looks like, to me, just looking at this draft class and even the undrafted free agents that they plan on bringing in, that Lynch and Shanahan have been able to come to some agreement or some understanding of what building this roster looks like in the short term and even in the long term. And I'd expect over the next year or two to see some more offensive pieces come in. But for the most part, I'd expect that this team goes heavy on defense in the draft early, make sure that they're continually restocking to keep that up. And like we've heard, Kyle Shanahan just continues to be an above average play caller that can beat almost everybody with marginal talent.
Yeah. So why don't we spitball? We'll go through the draft. So we talked at length in the last episode about Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster in that first round draft haul. But let's go through who the Niners took. I'll list the picks, and if you guys have any thoughts, feel free to chime in. But we'll start with Akello Witherspoon, the cornerback from Colorado. Tall, 33-inch arms, projects to fit really well within the new press cover 3 style defense they want to run. Good athlete. There are questions about his tackling and his toughness. C.J. Beathard, the quarterback from Iowa, also in round 3. They moved back into round 3 at the end of day 2 in the draft, really out of nowhere. I think based on his production last year and the season that he had for Iowa in 2016, people had maybe a 5th or 6th round grade on him mostly. But Kyle Shanahan spoke about the pick, and he said he really loved what he saw from him the previous year when he had a better supporting cast, when Iowa went 12-2 and ended up playing Solomon Thomas and Stanford in the Rose Bowl. And you read the Peter King piece that came out Monday morning. Kyle Shanahan actually said Beathard reminds him a lot of Kirk Cousins. And Beathard was taken around before Cousins was in his draft back in 2012. So you have that. You have Joe Williams, a running back from Utah, another guy who some people might think that the team reached for, but not because of his ability, because of questions they might have off the field. He left the team for a few weeks earlier this season. He had some personal family issues, and he was, you know, he talks about that. It's a long story, but we can get into it a little bit here. But ultimately, his sister died basically in his arms a decade ago, and he has always sort of blamed himself for it. And he just had trouble letting go of that issue and being able to take the blame off of himself. So he had to leave the team. And then when he came back, he was ultra productive for Utah. He has good measurables. He ran 4.4s at the combine. He seems like he could be a potential steal in the draft if he turns into the player that Kyle Shanahan has developed. You know, he's developed mid-round picks out of running backs pretty well in his history as an offensive coordinator. So then you have George Kittle, Iowa tight end, C.J. Beathard's really good friend and former roommate, a guy that it seems like a really good value in round 5, a really good blocker. He ran a 4.5. He's not a huge guy, but I think he was underutilized as a pass catcher and could end up being a steal. Then you have Trent Taylor, a kind of a jitterbug receiver, slot guy, punt returner from Louisiana Tech, who had some 1,800 yards last season to lead college football. DJ Jones, a super athletic nose tackle in round 6 from Mississippi, a guy who might have fallen just because there isn't a ton of value placed on nose tackles, but is a guy who might have starter quality traits down the road, just given his skill set and athleticism. Round 6, I'm going to do my best here. Pita Taumoepenu.
Pita T.
Pita. We'll just call him Pita, the outside linebacker, pass rusher, really the only Leo they drafted from Utah. Kind of an interesting guy with some upside. He was a part-time player for Utah, mostly as a pass rusher only. With some development, maybe he could find his way onto the field as a rookie. And Adrian Colbert is the last guy they took in round 7. A really athletic defensive back from Miami who they list as a safety right now. He played corner, but I think, you know, he's got really good size. He's 6'2", 205, and he's fast, and he's probably going to be a guy, if he makes the team, makes it as a core special teamer. So that's sort of the initial breakdown of all these picks after that first round. So, you know, Jared, well, I'll put it to you. Which guys in the middle or later portions of the draft stood out to you as good picks and who could potentially turn into impact starters?
To me, first and foremost, DJ Jones stands out. This dude is 6'1". He's like 320, but that weight is not really in his stomach, right? He's got a big old hips, big old butt, and he can move fast. He's really athletic given his size. He's a really explosive player. And some of the knock on him, and as I was watching his tape a little bit, playing in the SEC, you know, as you quote unquote scout players, you're going to see these guys regardless. They'll jump off film if they're solid. and he is solid. One of the things that I'll mention about him is that he gets a little reckless because he's so amped up and he's so athletic, and sometimes he really does just whip the dude across from him, that he could be beat easily on things like traps and counters because he's kind of leaving himself opened up deep in the backfield to just get ear hold. At the same time, for a young guy that's coming in, if you could ask him to do some things well, you're going to ask him to be explosive. You're going to ask him to be hyped up, to play with enthusiasm. So round six for me, that's a total steal. I would say that body type is hard to find, like that short, squatty, athletic interior defensive lineman. And we're not talking like a three technique. Like, this dude is a zero or one shade nose tackle that can really move. So that's a great pick. And I really like Adrian Colbert too. When I was watching Cornell, there was the other cornerback from Miami, Colbert kept standing out because he's just got great size. He's 6'2", 205, and he's built well. He runs quick. And I think that he's got this sort of power and really punch in his hands to be effective in this defense. So now, is that to say that they're starters immediately? I don't think so. But on this type of roster that is really unsettled, these guys have an opportunity to make the 53-man roster come the end of summer. And when you're deciding between veterans that you've seen some of, right, like they have tape on some of the interior nose tackles like Mike Purcell, and they go, okay, maybe Mike's maxed out. Maybe this is who Mike is, but we've got DJ Jones, who we've only had our hands on for 2 months, and he's got all these traits that we think we can build on. I have a feeling that this front office, knowing that they've got some financial security and time security in terms of their contracts and what Jed York expects from them, I tend to think that they're going to lean with these rookies and say, if we've got a guy that we think we can keep developing 2-3 years down the road to really be competitive, that's who we're going to go with.
Rob, were there any dudes taken in this draft that stood out to you as potential starters?
Hella dudes, man. Hella dudes.
And sick, bro.
To Jared's point, and I want to get this out of the way first, most of the time when a team is picking in the late rounds or they're signing undrafted free agents, there's kind of like a foregone conclusion that the vast majority of them will either have to compete very hard to make the roster or won't make it at all. And I don't think that's the case at all with this team, because you have to take into account the fact that these are all picks and selections and undrafted free agents that the team has chosen, that the new regime has targeted as being their guy. And so when you're there set up to players that were on the roster, that have come from the team, that, like Jared said, the team has tape on, they're going to get a little bit of, I guess you could say, the benefit of the doubt in the fact that, you know, one of them came from the team from before, the other team's guys, and then you have the new regime's guys. So there's going to be a little bit of favoritism towards the guys that they've targeted for the skills that they've already demonstrated. But as far as the draft class goes, the first one I'd have to hit is George Kittle, fifth-round tight end. Super good, super well-rounded. There's not a whole lot of holes to his game. You know, he's not huge. He's 6'4", 250, which isn't undersized by any means. But when you watch his film and you kind of break apart his game, there's not a whole lot of weakness to it. He loves to block. He's very scrappy. He more than one occasion he buried guys and put them into the ground, like literally playing to the whistle, which is always impressive to see. He's very good in the pass game. He ran a 4.5 40 at the combine. You can watch him run away from linebackers and create separation from him after he's got the ball. So there isn't a whole lot not to like there, and I think Shanahan's going to love him because he offers him both. You know, Shanahan uses his tight ends as blockers first and then pass catchers second, and George Kittle offers him both of those in spades. So I love that pick. And one person I'm really looking forward to is the very next pick in the fifth round, Trent Taylor, the wide receiver out of Louisiana Tech. And he's just the odds are 100% against him. He's 5'8", 180. You know, that right there stacks the chips against him a lot. But one of the things I mentioned earlier is when you watch him play, when he makes these catches, all 134 of them last year, he always, almost always, I wouldn't say always, he almost always has at least 3 or 4 yards of separation when he's catching the ball. And then he's outstanding after the catch. He runs mean. He's not easily brought down. And the fact that he creates so much separation is so impressive, even when he's in like a press, he's going up against press coverage. You know, so I'm really looking forward to him. I hope he gets a chance to crack that roster, and I hope Shanahan gives him a chance because he'd be outstanding on screen passes and bubble screens and stuff like that. And then, you know, in the short to intermediate game, like I said, he just creates a ridiculous amount of separation. He runs insane routes. I think out of like some ridiculous 100 and something, 100 high 100 targets, 170, 180 targets, he only drops 4. So it's like he's a ridiculously good wide receiver that's just his size is working against him. And I'm really looking forward to see if Shanahan gives him that shot.
Yeah, I think all those guys you mentioned are really interesting. I'm intrigued by the quarterback CJ Beathard, and I haven't been able to dig in and watch his games too much yet. But, you know, I was definitely surprised when I saw his name called, and I definitely thought he was a reach. But, you know, I think Kyle Shanahan knows what he looks for in quarterbacks, and he's he always is able to identify these guys and put them in situations to succeed. And you look at, you know, Beathard's career, particularly in 2015, he had a number of fourth quarter comebacks. He's played in cold weather games. He's played in a pro style offense. He's 6'2". He's got good size, his arm strength. It's not elite by any means, but I think it's definitely good enough. And I think it just sounds, you know, you listen to Kittle talk about him a lot. And I mean, obviously they're good friends and Kittle's not going to say a bad word about him, but you get the feeling that, and this is true of Kirk Ferentz players coming out of Ohio or Iowa, I should say, that they're, you know, they're tough guys. They're football players. They're very team oriented. They're mentally strong. They're smart. So if Beathard turns into that guy, then at worst you're looking at a capable backup who could potentially spell you, who's been in a pro system before, who's not going to have a super steep learning curve coming in to learn this offense, and he has the added bonus of playing with his good friend, who happens to be a tight end. And, you know, he's going to have his security blanket there already with him. So I'm curious to see how that relationship is going to continue with the 49ers now that they're pros, and if they're both going to benefit from the chemistry they've already developed. Joe Williams, a running back, I think is a super intriguing guy just because, you know, he has a skill set of someone who maybe could have gone in the second or third round had he had a squeaky clean college career. But you look at everything that happened, like we mentioned earlier, he started out his career at UConn, but then was kicked off the team for using a teammate's credit card. Then he spent a year out of football and then played at community college in Brooklyn before making his way to Utah. And then the thing happened this year with leaving the team. But you just look at what he does on the field, and he's a home run hitter, like Jared has said a few times. He runs a 4.4. He seems like he's going to be a perfect fit for the outside zone scheme. And I think what that brings up for me is a question about Carlos Hyde. And John Lynch, earlier this offseason, well before the draft, gave a pretty tepid endorsement of Carlos Hyde. And you know, they obviously Hyde's entering a contract year. He hasn't gotten a new contract. The 49ers were open over the weekend acknowledging that, yeah, Vance McDonald is on the trade block. Well, you wonder if they're having similar thoughts with Carlos Hyde. If he's going to be, you know, there's a chance that he could be one of these players cut this week as they bring in this draft class and sign all these undrafted free agents, because, you know, the 49ers have shown they don't have any allegiances to guys that were brought in under the previous front office. So, you know, they cut Torrey Smith, they cut Antoine Bethea with time left on their contract, they cut a few other guys. So you have to wonder if Carlos Hyde isn't a part of this long-term plan, and it sounds like Jed York is pretty committed to a long-term approach and not pushing all his chips into the table this year or next year. That, you know, if they could get something for Carlos Hyde, maybe in a trade, maybe they do that. Or they look at it as a addition by subtraction scenario where, you know, maybe they just decide to make Joe Williams a starter, and they run with him and Tim Hightower and Capri Bibbs, the guy they traded for from Denver on Friday. Actually, no, Saturday during the draft. So, you know, they might want to expedite the transition by getting rid of some of these guys, whether it be Hyde or McDonald. And I'm very curious to see, and maybe we'll have our answer by the time this this podcast comes out on Tuesday morning when people are listening to it, I would expect some of the cuts to be made either Tuesday or Wednesday while the team also announces its undrafted free agent signings. But you look at the way they're building this team, and they're overhauling this whole thing, and they're not really showing too many allegiances to guys brought in by Trent Baalke and his scouting department. So with that, I mean, the draft to me was really interesting. They filled a bunch of needs. They got guys that fit their scheme. Well, I'm curious what you guys think of the cornerback, Akello Witherspoon from Colorado. He seems like physically he could be a first-round guy. He's similarly built to Kevin King from Washington, who went first pick in the second round to the Packers. But I think King is regarded as a more physical and more aggressive and more willing tackler. I'm curious what you guys think about Witherspoon.
I think one of the things to go right off the bat and to address is I don't remember what day it was, whether it was yesterday or in the press conference after round three. But John Lynch, you know, someone specifically asked about, you know, Akello Witherspoon's tackling struggles and the fact that there's plays on tape where he literally tried to avoid contact and would move away from the running back. And, you know, teams noticed that and they would start running his direction. Now, my first reply to that would be you don't draft a cornerback for their run support. Like, that's just not what they were there for, especially in this new defense when you're going to have eight players in the box and the corners are going to be kind of holding their own on the outside. But what was interesting is when John Lynch was approached with that, his answer was, oh, like, essentially, no, we'll get it right. Like, you know, we saw that too, but we don't have any concerns about the fact that we're going to be able to correct that part of his game, which I thought was interesting, you know, to acknowledge what others had seen and then kind of just openly say, like, no, we'll make it right, and we're going to get him to where he's hitting and tackling. And he's such a raw prospect, and he hasn't been playing football very long. I know he was really big into soccer. And like you said, he fits that defense to a T, and he's just, you know, he's really, really promising clay that the team is hoping to mold into their typical press cornerback that can hold his own out there on the perimeter. So I really like the pick. There's no way you're going to run away from the guy. He's super quick. He's fluid. He had 22 pass breakups, which is a ridiculous number, and it kind of speaks to his inexperience, and he doesn't have a whole lot of ball skills yet. He's not making an interception. He did get one interception that basically sealed the game against Oregon in the end zone, which was pretty impressive. But, you know, there's something to be said about a guy that's as inexperienced as he is that's getting 22 pass breakups, and that kind of, you know, that he's somebody the team, especially taking him in early in the third round, where there was a plethora of talent available, it speaks to the team's willingness to kind of move him along and mold him into exactly what they need him to be.
Yeah, 6'3" and 200 pounds with long arms isn't exactly growing around on trees. So to grab a guy like that in the third, and particularly coming from a Colorado defense that was pretty good, and Colorado as a full team is good and coached well. I think their coach was actually coach of the year, possibly in all of college football, if not just alone in the Pac-12. But nonetheless, he's well coached, and like Rob mentioned, he's really raw. I mean, he's got this – he's not a blank canvas, but he's underdeveloped, if anything. And he's got – the 49ers have time to – make him into what they want. I mean, that's really what you have to look at with these guys, right? So some teams that are, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers that are pretty close to competing with New England for the AFC Championship, they need players that can play right now and play well. The 49ers have the luxury of, you know, competing in an NFC West that I don't think is going to be quite as good next year as it has been recently, and competing with a coaching staff and front office that has a little bit of security and understands that this is probably a 2 to 3 year project. So you take a guy like this who's got the length you like, who's got the, like Rob mentioned, the fluidity, he's got the athleticism that you like, and maybe he's a little inconsistent, and maybe he struggles to play with the physicality and the run game that you desire, but you build him into that. And ultimately, if he wants to see the field, he's going to recognize that. I don't think NFL coaches are going to take it easy on this guy. Whereas in college, you know, at Colorado, maybe he's just cruising as the best athlete on the field or one of the best athletes on the field. At least in the Colorado program. So I could see the 49ers, not necessarily in this first year, but by the second year, saying, all right, we've developed this guy to where his tackling is good enough, maybe never great, but good enough And he's the ideal, you know, long rangy corner that we want, that we think can move. And like Rob mentioned, especially in this defense, not just in the NFL, but especially in this defense, the corners are not your run defenders. They are, you know, last chance on the edge run defenders. Ideally, you know, they're press and they've got length down the field to hang on their own to defend passes. But this is not a guy that you're going to ask to sink his hips and take on a running back on at the edge routinely.
Yeah. So one, before we get to Barrows, I want to talk about what the 49ers didn't do in the draft. And I wrote about it on Saturday. They didn't draft a safety. So Jimmy Ward is going to be, barring anything unforeseen or another injury, he's going to be the starting free safety. Eric Reed's going to be the strong safety. And I know we had talked a lot about the possibility of maybe Jamal Adams being that first pick in early in the first round, or even Malik Hooker. He wound up going all the way down to 15 with the Colts. But one thing I thought that was interesting about Peter King's article, you know, his immersive story about being in the draft room as everything was shaken out, the 49ers in the third round were interested. First, they were interested in TJ Watt in round one. And maybe if he would have been there, you know, at 34, they might have considered taking him, but the Steelers snatched him up at the end of round one before the Niners took Foster. And then they liked Terrell Basham, a guy who I wrote a little bit about a couple times leading up to the draft, as a potential edge rusher. And, you know, we talked about Solomon Thomas being a 3-5 technique and sort of a interior pass rusher, but the 49ers really didn't find you know, they added a linebacker, but they didn't get a Sam linebacker, unless drafting Foster moves Malcolm Smith to Sam, which I think he would be comfortable doing. But they didn't get a pass rusher from the edge until the sixth round in Pita Taumo-Penu.
Pita T.
I'm gonna figure out how to say that at some point. But I think
I'm just gonna keep yelling Pita T every time you try.
Okay, that's fine. But it speaks to something that's interesting because, you know, we talk about the 49ers, you know, moving off of guys like Vance McDonald and maybe Carlos Hyde. And I think going into this, you would think Eric Armstead might be one of those players too. But the 49ers are trying Armstead at Leo, and they think he's their best pass rusher. And so they're going to put him out on the edge in that wide technique after he spent, you know, his college career and his first two seasons with the Niners playing as an interior 3-4 defensive lineman. So it's going to be a new role for him, and he might be, you know, a square peg going into a round hole out there. But he's super athletic, but he's going to have to work on his pad level and sinking his hips and being flexible around the edge, which is something, I mean, he's played wide before. It's not that he's never played there. He's been used there sparingly. But you know, I think it was interesting because going into the draft, you looked at all the pass rushers that were going to be available, and you would say, you know, there were a lot of obvious Leo candidates in early, you know, in the second, third, maybe even the fourth round, and the 49ers didn't take any of those guys. So, you know, were there guys that, you know, I know Tim Williams went to Baltimore, I think in the third or fourth round, the Alabama pass rusher, we talked about Basham. Were there guys that you guys were a little bit surprised the 49ers passed on in the middle rounds in terms of adding to the pass rush and the value of those edge players as they convert to this new defense?
Well, one of the things that surprised me is, and I'm drawing a blank right now, Carl Lawson from Auburn. He was routinely considered one of the better pass rushers in this draft, and he fell quite a bit. I'm bringing his name up right now because, you know, I can't remember the exact round he was drafted in, but he fell all the way down to the Bengals with the ninth pick in the fourth round. And in a lot of the mock drafts, which obviously this draft more than any draft proved just how inaccurate they can be, but I think most people thought he was a second round, third round guy at the latest, and to fall all the way down to, you know, the fourth round and pick nine, that's a pretty decent fall for a guy of his caliber. Like you said, it was surprising to see the 49ers pass on so many pass rushers and the fact that they had such a desperate need at it. But I think, like you said, maybe the team, it's unfortunate that it was within a draft with such a deep class, but maybe the team wants to try and see how their defensive players shake out, like you were talking about Armstead, and he may, you know, he may get a lot of action at that Leo spot, and maybe the team wants to do a little bit more of their homework and seeing what they got in their own guys before they invested in the draft. And the fact that they passed up a pass rusher is obviously, you know, you're passing on a need, but it's not like the players that they got were luxury or stuff. They all kind of had their own obvious intentions within the roster. So one thing
you're not going to be able to fill every single need after a 2-14 season with one draft class.
No, and there were needs basically across the roster. There, no matter what they did, they were going to pass. They were going to leave holes on the roster because there were just too many to fill in one draft. One thing I will say real quick that I wanted to highlight is one of the undrafted free agents that they're signing, Lorenzo Jerome. He's out of St. Francis. Kind of a smaller school guy, but he from what I read, he was considered one of the most sought after undrafted free agents in the fact that he is very much the type of free safety that they're looking for. And take a little bit of off of NFL.com here, but he had almost 60 tackles, 5.5 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks, 3 interceptions, and 10 pass breakups. And when they're describing him, he says NFL teams love instinctive safeties who take the ball away, and Jerome is working on a master's degree in both categories. So, like we were talking about earlier, a lot of these undrafted free agents are going to get the nod in terms of being up against competing guys who are already on the roster. So, as far as whether or not they actually move Jimmy Ward to free safety, and the fact that they didn't address that in the draft, which, like you were talking about Malik Hooker, he's an intriguing guy to keep your eye on for either good depth or to give Jimmy Ward a solid run for his money back there at free safety.
Jared, what areas do you think the 49ers missed on in the draft?
I think, like you mentioned, Leo was something that I expected to be addressed a little sooner, and especially once we saw that run on defense early, especially with the first two picks, I thought, okay, after they got those guys day two and into round three, they had to be looking Leo, and they didn't necessarily. One guy that I thought they could have had was Derek Rivers out of Youngstown State. I thought he's solid, could absolutely play the Leo, a guy that rushes from the edge well, has some serious explosiveness, strong dude that put up 30 bench press reps. I thought that in the third, he would be an absolute steal. He was discussed as a potential late first round guy who had some serious steam coming into the draft. So as he's sitting there, especially in round two on the second day, I was expecting to see a move possibly to target him sooner. And he ended up going in the 80s, I think, to the Patriots. So he's somebody that I thought they could have manipulated picks a little bit more to target, and I thought he's a day one Leo. Really quickly, I'll say about Lorenzo Jerome. He showed up to the Senior Bowl, like Rob mentioned, he's a small school dude, and he has swagger like you wouldn't believe. Dude had no problem competing. Especially, I really liked his coverage ability in the intermediate range. So at the Senior Bowl, you know, one-on-ones is insanely difficult for the defenders where there's all this open field, and he was comfortable against tight ends. He was comfortable, from a typical slot alignment. I thought he showed good coverage skills from a guy that, you know, you hear small school and you wonder, is he just beaten up on weak competition, or can he really hang? And he absolutely did. So to lure him in, much like they have with a couple other really impressive undrafted free agents, is exciting about what Lynch and Shanahan are in terms of selling points for players. Aside from the Leo position, though, I was a little surprised that they didn't go with an offensive guard a little sooner in the draft. And I know that they've got Garnett and they've got Tiller and they have Zane Beatles. But if you're talking about really building a solid core offensive line, I thought they could have taken an offensive guard and probably even an offensive tackle at some point. And I know they brought a bunch of guys in through after the draft. But I anticipated that they would grab at least one developmental lineman to work with, especially once they cut Marcus Martin. But they've got Zudas, so I assume that they're, I guess, comfortable with the interior offensive line.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for chatting it up about the draft. We're gonna do this again really soon. And now we're gonna speak with Matt Barrows, 49ers beat writer for the Sacramento Bee. So we are here with Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee, good friend of the site. Matt wrote a lot of stuff over the weekend and during the draft, and you should all check it out. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, just fantastic. Just enjoying this nice weather.
Yeah, we've officially hit summer, I think, today.
Yeah, I think the draft marked it. Like, the Mother Nature saw that all the picks were made, and now people like us can finally venture outside. And so she decided to bring the sun out.
Right. April comes in like a lamb and out like a draft.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, good talk. So, Matt, obviously, you know, John Lynch has been getting a lot of praise for what he was able to do in the first round by getting Solomon Thomas, a guy you wrote about as your draft crush this year.
And thank you for noticing that my draft crush was taken with the third overall pick.
No, that was quality work by you.
Thank you.
But you know, what was your takeaway from the way that first round went? And in particular, being able to move back and the machinations of that trade with Chicago from 2 to 3, and being able to get back into the first round at 31 to take Foster.
Yeah, I mean, every time a general manager holds a post-draft press conference, you hear the phrase, you know, we waited and then we traded back, and then the guy we wanted all along was the guy that fell to us. And this time, it turns out that it's absolutely true. I mean, Lynch said the other day that if for some reason the Bears had taken Solomon Thomas at 2, and they had no idea who the Bears were going to take, that they were prepared to take Reuben Foster at 3. And I sort of was a little bit skeptical when he said that, because, like I said, every general manager says that. But the Peter King report this morning verified that, corroborated that. And I think that's fairly amazing that somebody that the 49ers were prepared to take at 3 ended up going to them at 31. And that probably, wasn't going to happen unless they made that initial trade with the Bears, and that gave them some extra ammunition. So they ended up getting two of the top three guys in their on their draft board, and that's right there. That's an A draft. I mean, if you can do that, and the 49ers, of course, did that, and then they did a lot more over the next 2 days.
Yeah. So one of the things that came out and has been reported a few different ways since that first trade was made with Chicago was the fact that, you know, some people were reporting that the Bears were bidding against themselves. And then in that Peter King piece, he talked about Parag Marate being on the phone with multiple teams and fielding offers for that 2 pick. But from everything you've sensed and gathered did the Bears have to make that deal to get up to 2? Ultimately, that gave the 49ers the ammunition they needed to get back into round 1 for Foster?
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't know if we'll ever know that. I mean, I can see another team wanting to get to 2, but the question is whether the 49ers would have taken that trade, and maybe they would have if they thought that Reuben Foster was going to be at 12 or wherever they were going to trade to. I believe in them when they said they did get other calls. Now, whether those calls were plausible or actable, that's what I don't know. And, that's the question that may never be answered publicly. But I think the 49ers did exactly what they wanted to do. I mean, they wanted to trade down, and they wanted to take Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster. And they got all three of those things. So, like I said, every GM thinks that his first round was amazing and wants to spin it really well. I think in the 49ers case, that's actually true.
All right, Matt, it's Rob jumping in here. How you doing, bud?
Oh, hey, Rob, what's going on?
Oh, you know, just talking draft with the with Matt Barrows here. But I wanted to ask
what could be better. What could be better than that?
I'm really having trouble coming up with anything else right now. You know, I knew that was coming, but I can't give you anything. So you're up there with a lot of the kind of the success that goes along with what the Foster pick and how it's perceived and the fact that they got him so late in the draft. It's kind of, I wouldn't say it's glossed over, but the pick still comes with a healthy amount of risk, you know, with his off the field stuff, the diluted sample, the shoulder. Do you still think that was the direction the team needed to go? I mean, is it still, you know, a pretty resounding pick?
Well, at 31, I think it's a pretty resounding pick. I mean, if it had been at 3 and it had all those caveats and red flags, I think that would have been sort of the story of the first round. And all this glory that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are getting right now wouldn't be happening. But at 31, it doesn't seem like as big of a risk, just given how good a player he was and the 49ers' need. I mean, I think Reuben Foster's path is going to be he'll start out as a will linebacker next to Navarro Bowman, learn the ropes, and then over time, perhaps he's the Navarro Bowman in waiting, the guy who takes over as that Mike inside linebacker. So, you know, you talk to anybody that knows football and is a draft Nick, and they'll tell you the same thing, is that this guy on a defense that was just teeming with you know, quality players in first-round selections, he jumped off the screen just because of how active he was, how hard he hit, how his teammates rallied around him. And I think that's sort of the theme that that John Lynch wanted to hit. He wanted to bring in guys that would change the culture, that would change the atmosphere in the locker room, on the field. This was a 49ers team that had no teeth last year on defense. And he brings in two guys that really were able to sort of take over games. And, you know, like I said, teammates would rally around. So in that sense, I think it's exactly what they were looking for. They got two of those things. And I would say that the first round was about as big a home run as that they could have had.
There was another guy you also wrote about leading up to the draft, a Sacramento native, Akella Witherspoon, the Niners' third-round pick. The lanky corner, a really good athlete. He tested really well and seems like he's going to be a really good fit for what they want to do in that secondary. But there are questions about his toughness and tackling. From what you gathered when reporting on that story and from what you were able to glean from him, does he have the personality to become more of a physical presence? Is he willing to take on that physicality and change his game to be the player the 49ers need him to be?
Yeah, and I think that's what John Lynch was getting at on Friday. This is a guy that's a learner. You know, whatever he puts his mind to, he achieves. He's got a great work ethic. I mean, the line from my story on him was that he could have played Division I, sports in four different sports: soccer, basketball, baseball, and football. I mean, he's just that talented and that dedicated. So the thought with him is that if he perceives tackling and physicality as a weakness, he'll attack it and he'll get better. He's still growing. That's the odd thing about this guy. The third round is always about potential. That's usually the round that a team takes a guy that might have a red flag or something. It's about risk and reward. And with Akella Witherspoon, it's the reward is that he's just untapped at this point. He probably won't reach his full size for a couple of years. He told me that he thought he would be playing at 210 pounds eventually. And a 210-pound, 6'3" cornerback—that's something. I mean, that's unique. I think Richard Sherman is 195. So, whether he's a factor this year is a question mark. But the 49ers are betting that he's going to be something very special down the line. And he only started playing football seriously as a senior in high school. Went to community college, Sac City College. His freshman year of college and really has only been playing at a higher level a couple of years. So the whole idea is upside with him. The 49ers feel like that upside was worth the risk.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned kind of red flags and taking a risk once you get into the third round, because the very next pick was, in my opinion, one of the most intriguing picks of the entire draft in Utah, running back Joe Williams. I mean, a pretty incredible story, not just from him, but from John Lynch's perspective, and kind of brushing him off in the beginning and kind of being coaxed into checking him back out. And then he went from brushing him off to trading up to get him. What was your take on that?
Yeah, you're right. That was the best story of the draft, of all those picks. My take is that it's another risky pick. And, you know, the risk is that the 49ers talk themselves into it. That, you know, they even admitted it, that Kyle Shanahan watched this guy on tape and saw that he was everything that he wanted in a running back. He was just so talented. And then said, you know, is there any way to, you know, reconcile picking him? And the 49ers did a lot of research on it, and they decided, yeah, there was. But, you know, the question is whether they talked themselves into that pick. And I guess only time will tell. You know, he's got a very interesting story. He's got a very good reason for, you know, the biggest red flag about him, which was walking away from the Utah team for 4 weeks. And he was still dealing with his sister's death from a decade ago. And he was still wrestling with the guilt that he felt about that. And that's all that, you know, that's all that all could be. But there are other red flags about him as well. And so, again, the third and the fourth round, you're sort of taking risk. You're taking a leap of faith on guys who have fallen to that point. And the leap of faith is that they're going to overcome the very things that have caused them to fall. So, again, another gamble. Three and four were, I don't think Witherspoon was quite as big a gamble, but it's interesting. If it pans out, these are, you know, these are home run swings that they're taking in the third and the fourth round. And sometimes the ball goes over the fence and sometimes you strike out. So that's the question that, you know, will be answered in the coming years.
Yeah. To pull back the curtain a little bit, Barrows on Friday, we were, you know, we had just spoken to John Lynch about his pick in the third round to take Witherspoon. And then some of us were even packing up and getting ready to leave. I'm not going to name names. But, you know, and then all of a sudden the 49ers, they have some action and trade back into round three and take a quarterback that I didn't see anybody really write about at all beyond being maybe a fifth or sixth round pick in C.J. Beathard from Iowa. And it turns out Kyle Shanahan, you know, really just loved what he saw from 2015, not last season, when his supporting cast was better and when they went 12-2 and went to the Rose Bowl. What was Beathard on your radar at all? And what'd you think of that pick?
No, he wasn't. And, you know, if we were looking at the plain Jane fourth round pick that he was going to take, it was going to be Nathan Peterman. That's the one that sort of the draft experts and the QB experts sort of circled as the guy who reminded them a lot of Kirk Cousins and a guy who the 49ers could take. Lo and behold, that guy ended up being C.J. Beathard. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, over the course of their careers, who's more successful. And it may be, you know, both or none of the above, or both are backups for the rest of their careers. But, you know, Kyle Shanahan knows what he likes. He's very confident in that. And the upshot from the Monday morning quarterback story this morning was that he saw a lot of the same things that he saw on Kirk Cousins, a guy that he was involved in drafting in the fourth round in 2012 in Washington. So that'll be interesting because, you know, he's going to get a chance. You know, at that point, there are only two quarterbacks on the roster. So he's a shoo-in to make the roster, or at least the practice squad this year. He'll get to develop under Shanahan, and it'll be fun to see whether lightning strikes twice, whether he was able to sort of identify these qualities in sort of an anonymous quarterback. You know, Kirk Cousins wasn't you know, anything people were writing home about in 2012 either, but the similarities, both play in a pro-style system, both play in the Big Ten, and both are sort of known for, I don't know, for lack of a better term, their pocket courage. They stay in the pocket. They don't shy away from pressure. And if you listen to Kyle Shanahan in the run-up to the draft, that was something that he cited a lot, a guy who is willing to take a hit, is willing to kind of stay in and make those tough throws with pressure bearing down on him. And C.J. Beathard definitely fits that definition.
Yeah, and then so now, you know, with the draft and with some, I don't know, what are there, 14 or 15 undrafted guys expected to be brought in this week? We're looking at a scenario where the 49ers are going to have to make a ton of cuts from incumbent players on the roster, and maybe by the time people listen to this, some of those cuts will be announced. We're recording this Monday night, and word is from the team that they could come on Tuesday or Wednesday. But, Matt, are there guys, you know, I know that the 49ers have openly talked about Vance McDonald being on the trade block, but maybe guys, you know, like Carlos Hyde or Zane Beatles or some guys who are starters and contributors the last couple of years, are these guys that could be in danger of losing their jobs as cuts, or are the 49ers going to be willing to stick it out with some of these guys in training camp and kind of put them to the test against some of these new players they're bringing in?
Yeah, well, I mean, they've already shown that they're not going to be shy about turning away from some big names. I mean, we saw that in Torrey Smith, et cetera, et cetera. They tried to shop Vance McDonald, as you just noted. So, you know, it may be that nobody's safe. Obviously, the guy that they brought in free agency will be, although I don't know. I mean, maybe they, you know, some of these, the lesser free agents that they brought in, the lesser priced ones, they got a chance to watch them for 3 days in a mini camp last week, and maybe they reached some conclusions. And, you know, it could be a mix of guys that they recently brought in versus guys that have been on the roster that get cut. Trent Baalke's draft picks, a lot of them haven't panned out. And it would not be a surprise if we saw more of those guys, hitting the road over the next few days.
Is there anybody, Matt, that you think that hasn't gotten a lot of airtime, hasn't gotten a lot of attention? Somebody that might be, whether they were taken late in the draft or an undrafted free agent, somebody you think that might surprise us as far as how much of an impact they can make right away or kind of putting their stamp, whether it be in training camp or preseason or going all the way into the season? Is there anybody that stands out to you right away?
Yeah, DJ Jones, the Ole Miss defensive tackle that they took, I think, in the sixth round. He just seems to fit the profile for what they're looking for so well. And that's sort of how the Seahawks have operated. They've taken guys at that position late in the draft that weren't fits on other teams, but are good fits for their team, and they're able to get really good value for those picks. And I think Jones is sort of fits that mold. I'm not saying that he's going to overtake Earl Mitchell for the starting role, but I think he's a guy that they'll keep around on the roster. Maybe he's active, maybe he's not on game days, but he's somebody down the line that I think has starter potential just because of what that position entails. It's coming off the field probably on passing down, so may play 50% of the snaps, say. And, you just have to be able to have the quickness to mind your gaps. And, DJ Jones seems to have all of that, made a lot of plays early in the year, probably tailed off a little bit late in the year, but just a really good fit for the profile the 49ers have at that spot.
Now, Matt, with John Lynch making his first draft and the front office taking an entirely new look, and they seem to have a completely different approach in terms of transparency and collaboration. When you look at everything that's happened since early February when Shanahan and Lynch were brought in, is there sort of an overriding theme for you and just in a broad sense of what the 49ers have been able to do in terms of changing the culture, like you mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone's on the same page. I mean, that was just clear over the last 3 days when Lynch and Shanahan were sitting up there together and going over the picks. Last year, Trent Baalke and Chip Kelly were not on the same page. You know, some of the picks that were made, especially later in the draft, just did not seem to be Chip Kelly guys. And, you know, I think that was probably a number of factors, but I felt like Chip Kelly was was playing that whole 2016 season without, you know, without Chip Kelly guys. So, you know, when that happens, it's not a surprise that they went 2-14. These two guys are on the same page. Obviously, John Lynch is acquiescing to all of the offensive picks that Kyle Shanahan wants. I mean, that or Shanahan and his guys have come up with just a really specific idea of what they're looking for in these picks. And so, you know, once these guys hit the field, because of that, they're going to be able to, you know, shine better. George Kittle is a great example, a guy who's just a fantastic blocker and probably an underrated pass catcher. And in a Kyle Shanahan offense, you need that. You need that kind of dual threat potential. That's what the whole offense is predicated on. He was just a perfect Kyle Shanahan pick, and they took him early on in the fifth round. So I think there was a lot of cohesion between Lynch and Shanahan, and you know, theoretically, that's going to pay off on the field.
Well, cool, Matt. We will keep it locked on your blog at the Sacramento Bee, and I assume I will see you a little bit later this week when rookies report, and we'll cover some rookie minicamp this month, and we'll see you soon. Hopefully you get to be spend some time outside and enjoy this beautiful weather.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thanks for wishing me that. And I want to congratulate you on winning our draft pool the other day.
Oh, you're too kind.
That took a lot of restraint for you not to put that out there on this podcast.
Oh, I really appreciate that. I was actually able to go buy myself a couple soda pops over the weekend, so it was a nice little victory.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah. All right, Matt. We will chat soon. And thanks again for joining us on the Niners Wire podcast.
All right. Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Chris. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, Matt.
See ya.